Hello, I am Cody Allingham, and this is The Transformation of Value, a place for asking questions about freedom, money, and creativity. When did you last stop to think about the methods of reconciliation available for an individual when they have a problem with a larger group? What are the ways we can express our discontent in our relationship with the nation state, with companies that we buy from, with the voluntary associations that we are members of, or with other groups such as churches, families, and neighborhoods? What does it mean to have the ability to simply exit and walk away? And what does it mean when you can't? In the situations where it is harder or impossible to leave, what is the role of voice, of expressing your opinion and trying to affect change in these relationships from the inside? And what happens when they don't listen? German economist Albert Hirschman wrote about these questions in his 1970 book, Exit, Voice and Loyalty, Responses to Decline in Firms, Organizations and States. Hirschman's book explores the two modes of peaceful expression of discontent, exit and voice, and I think these are useful concepts for us to frame our own social relationships. Traditionally, in economics, there is an emphasis on the role of exit, perhaps in part because it's a lot easier to model. In a theoretically perfect competitive market, when a company lowers their quality or puts their price up, customers will immediately exit and go to a competitor until there is equilibrium. This is the supermarket thinking, where demand is highly elastic, and as a consumer, you just choose a different product off the shelf. But in the realm of politics, voice has always been the major consideration. Democracy is supposed to be about voice and opinion, about complaining and petitioning. Elected representatives are ostensibly supposed to represent their electorate. Exit, in a political sense, has often been branded as desertion, defection, and there are a lot of passions and preconceptions which are not present in the economic realm. However, there is of course a role for voice in the economic realm. If we take a step away from the supermarket and look at higher value purchases, people are going to be a lot more vocal about their dissatisfaction with a major investment like a car or a computer than with simple purchases like laundry detergent or clothing. There is a lot we can learn from both economics and politics when it comes to resolving these interrelational problems through voice and exit. I think a major takeaway for me reading this book is to appreciate the power of voice in particular, which can be lost when exit is made too easy. When someone can just ghost a business or organization without saying anything, they deprive that organization of learning the reasons for their failure. Interestingly, when it comes to public goods, this is revealed in sectors such as transportation and education, which are often subject to competition from the private sector. With this competition, instead of stimulating better performance from the public enterprise, it actually deprives it of the feedback mechanism you would have if they were a total monopoly. It's possible in many situations that the consumers who drop out first as price increases are not the same as those who exit first when quality declines. In some cases, there may be no net difference in the balance sheet of the company at first, but the makeup of the customer base may begin to change and become more price-focused and less quality-focused. This perhaps shows a financial bias, which may fail to take into account things such as loyalty, taste, or other important factors of who it is that you have a relationship with. In the political realm, this can also be seen in some situations where a political party may attempt to move to the centre to gain more votes, when actually the policy compromises that they make to do that actually alienate their most core membership, which means there is less overall energy and enthusiasm for activism and supporting the party, which results actually in a net overall loss of votes. This doesn't happen everywhere, but it is worthwhile to consider and keep in mind. We must ask, what is the relationship between the silent majority and the vocal active voices? Some other things that come to mind are open source software projects. It's a common statement that if you don't like what an open source software project is doing, you can just fork it and make the changes on your own. But how much talent and energy is wasted by doing this? On the other hand, how much would instead be lost on compromise and negotiation? There is an interesting interplay here that is useful to keep in mind if we happen to be in a position where we are running a business, community, or project. We must ask ourselves, are we making it easy for people to voice their concerns, or are we making them walk away without even telling us? The idea of loyalty is the other big part of Hirschman's book. If someone has considerable attachment to a product or organization, they will often search for ways to make themselves influential enough to get it back on track if they think it is going down the wrong path. But this will only work if they believe that their voice can actually have an impact. When they feel like they're not being listened to, these potential internal reformers and leaders can actually become the most radical of antagonists. There are many stories of voices being ignored and turning into exit. A customer once complained to Enzo Ferrari about the quality of his car's clutches. Ferrari insulted him, saying, what did he know? He was just a tractor builder. But that tractor builder went on to found the competitor, Lamborghini. We see similar stories with numerous other businesses and even with the foundation of the United States of America itself. But there is an interesting contradiction where a little bit of exit potential actually gives a lot more credence to the power of voice in the first place. When someone is stuck in an absolute monopoly that is not listening at all, you really don't have anywhere to go, and so management can choose to ignore you. But a little bit of exit possibility means the management have to at least pay some attention. Boycotts are a fascinating hybrid of exit and voice, where exit is actually performed rather than just threatened, but it is undertaken for the specific purpose of achieving a change of policy on the part of the organization, which would usually be the goal of voice. Now, I wanted to just touch briefly on exit and voice in American ideology and practice. Lewis Hartz wrote, in a real sense, physical flight is the American substitute for the European experience of a social revolution. I think this is very interesting given the cultural dominance of the United States today. Hirschman adds to this, the present-day cop-out movements of groups like the hippies is very much in the American tradition. Once again, dissatisfaction with the surrounding social order leads to flight rather than fight, to withdrawal of the dissatisfied group and to its setting up of a separate scene. In a sense, this provides the American paradigm for problem solving, which we see emerge in many aspects of open source software, business disruption, Bitcoin, and even libertarianism itself. If we are running any kind of business, organization, or community, whether big or small, we must ask ourselves, what are the ways we are listening to those we have a relationship with, and what options do they have to express themselves to us? To sum up, I think Hirschman really brings to light an interesting dynamic between exit and voice, and loyalty, actually, in a way that economics had not previously integrated, and which even today a lot of people may not think about. For governments, legacy banks, or other monopolies that were previously unchallenged, I think there is a lot of pride and arrogance pinned to the difficulty of exiting a nation state or a financial system, though I think the opposite is actually being clearly demonstrated by something like the brain drain from my home country of New Zealand, where talented people are leaving, or even the increased interest in things like Bitcoin. I think these should be indicators that something is wrong with the management of the existing system, and it would repay the incumbents to pay attention closely. Underneath the idea of political exit, there is a kind of finality. If I leave my home country, it's a much higher stakes decision than changing my laundry detergent brand. In small amounts, this can slip through the cracks as flight, but at a larger scale, it does run the risk of becoming fight. Over the last 5 years, a lot of people have been alienated and perhaps even radicalized with actions of various governments and the manipulation of the monetary system and all sorts of scandals. And importantly, they have not been listened to. So what does it mean to engage the art form of voice and discussion? What are the political pathways for negotiation and compromise when it comes to questions of money and state? Having exit as a looming threat is very important, and I think it's a powerful tool for change. At the same time, is there a way to turn potential radical exit into internal reform? I do recommend checking out Albert Hirschman's book for details on these fascinating topics. There is a lot more than I'm able to express here, but I think he presents some powerful ideas through which we can look at our own social relations. Thank you for listening. If you would like to reach out to me, send an email to hello@thetransformationofvalue.com and I will get back to you.